They went through and they said 5 million, 5 million, 5 million, 15 million. My lawyer's jaws dropped. My jaw dropped. Like, I couldn't believe it. And like, I heard this 30 million and I was just like, is the world an okay place? It started to like restore my faith in humanity. Like that moment, like I was like, wow, these people on this jury could see like how much this impacted me. I had two of my friends come on the stand that day and like talk about like how bad it was to like do all the searching, getting the images down, all the things they were supporting me with, how I was like spending the night at my friend Sarah's house all the time because I was like too afraid to like be in my home alone because I was like just so traumatized, you know. And they both cried when they took the stand and they were talking about this. When I saw them crying 6 years after all this was happening, I was like, wow, this just didn't impact me. You know, like this was very traumatic for all of the people in my life. You know, this was really big. And for the jury to like really see that and acknowledge that, yeah, it felt like, okay, maybe I can trust the universe again. Maybe.
But first, a word from our sponsors.
Welcome to the Man Whore Podcast.
Shout out to the lusty landlords, to the subby supers, and to all the broker bottoms out there who think they run this fucking city. This is Billy Presida, and you're listening to the Man Whore Podcast. I took $140 out of an ATM the other night and then it spit my card out and I walked away from the machine without the money. And I thought I should have children with my ex-girlfriend. What? Welcome to the show. My guest this week is Dr. Spring Cooper. She is the first person to press charges under New York State's fairly new revenge porn statutes. And recently, you may have seen this in the news, she won a $30 million judgment against her ex-boyfriend. And she's going to be sharing her story and some information about revenge porn, about non-consensual intimate media in just a little bit. But regular listeners may be happy, excited, compersive for me. I went to my first sex party in like 4 or 5 months. The tingles, the jingles, the boners, they're coming back. It's kind of cool to feel like sexual urges again. I was invited to a friend's birthday orgy slash boob voyage pre-breast reduction, the last showing of the full girls on Saturday night. And you know, I wasn't sure if I was going to go again. I haven't been to a party in a minute. I kind of thought that if I went to a party again, it would be with a date with someone I like. But then I looked it up and it was 3 blocks away. It's $30. I had no excuse. So I hyped myself up with ways I've talked about before. You know, I said, hey, I'm going to introduce myself to 5 people. If I want to leave after that, I can go. I got myself into an outfit that made me feel sexy. Shout out to Menagerie. I was wearing my Menagerie brief cuts, my Menagerie lace tank top, my Menagerie silk fitted hat, and then a nice brushing of unicorn snot glitter, which is still on me today. And then another thing I do, and I've tried to do since the beginning of my going to sex parties, and I linked up with a dude. I spoke to a dude. Don't get too excited, okay? I spoke with a man, and I think we're friends now. But he comes into parties with a similar expectation where it's not, I'm going to a sex party to get laid. You go to a sex party, especially as a solo guy. The expectation you set is to go to a really fun house party where you might get laid. My version of that is my goal is I would love to make out with someone new. If I make out with someone new, great night, and then everything else is bonus. When we go on a first date, I think setting expectations, lowered expectations, is like really important. He doesn't need to be the love of your life and the future father of your children on that first date. Homeboy might be a little nervous, may not be giving you his best showing. If you go home with her the first night, putting your penis in her vagina, if you're thinking butthole, boy, you need to really lower those expectations. Penis and vagina sex, that could be a high threshold to clear, both with like her interest, her consent, your penis being comfortable enough to work and do the thing. Lower that bar. It doesn't all have to happen on that first night. It's great to have dreams and wants and desires, but it's nice to take the pressure off yourself. That way, if you don't get the dream, you can still have a good time. Don't make the dream the only way to have a good time. Make having a good time be a good time. And like, yeah, maybe you'll get your dick sucked. I don't know. I made out with three cuties. I was happy with myself. Even put some titties in my mouth. It was a fun time. And my dick didn't come out once at all. But that it was a little partially because, and I was reminded at this party, what kind of play party template character I am. I am guy who will ask to make out with you, but will forget to ask you if you want to go upstairs to fuck. That's me. I like making out too much. I'm so sorry. It's just your tongue felt real good in my mouth. I forgot where else it would feel good. I actually had a really full ass erotic sexual weekend. You can hear more about it in my bonus episode coming out tomorrow exclusively on Patreon. It involves a happy ending massage, involves a date night. It involves my relationship with macaque. And frankly, if you just stick around to the very end of this episode, you'll hear a nice little tease of that. So, you know, that's there for me to dangle at you. Let's do a fan whore appreciation moment. Okay, I think I'm accepting that we will not hit my goal of 500 Patreon members for the 10-year podiversary on April 16th. I'll get over it. See, it's nice to have high goals, but let's not have high expectations. Why would I expect $2 from all of you? That's so silly that I do all this work and expect you to give me $2. You know, it's so silly. I should expect $10 a month from you. Okay, get on in there. These are some people who got on in there. I want to give them shout outs for being members of the Fan Whore community on Patreon. I want to say thank you so much to Jesse Mehring. Quack, quack, bitch. You know. Thanks so much for supporting the show. And I want to give a shout out to James Ladd, who I assume is not the very famous dead DJ. But if it is, I also, look, what, if you want to commit credit card fraud to give me money, that's not my business. My business is transferring it from Patreon to my bank account. That's my business. How you get that money to me, I have no questions. Thank you, James. And you too can become a member, support the podcast, receive a slew of great rewards, and know that you are keeping yours truly fed and housed. And you can do all that for as little as $2 a month. And hey, let me give you a little hint. It might not be only $2 a month for that much longer. So you may want to get on in there. Become a member today. Support the pod you love at patreon.com/manwhorepodcast. That's Patreon, patreon.com/manwhorepodcast. If you can't find me on the app, it's because I am adult content. Do it on a browser first. Okay. Spring Cooper is a dear friend, a wonderful, silly soul in this world, and something really terrible happened to her. And I'm going to let her tell you about it. And don't worry, we try to have a few laughs in the process. It is helpful that the guy in question is, you know, very laughable. I didn't say funny, just easy to laugh at. And now my conversation with Dr. Spring Cooper.
I was going to show you my new tattoo, but I have to take off my shirt to do it because I don't have on a...
You can do that.
I don't have on an easily showable shirt right now.
That's okay. But
I just got a tattoo of me in a bathtub full of $30 million.
Okay. I mean, we could still see it. This is not a video podcast. I can just be descriptive. I think it's fair to say, without going into much detail, seen before.
I'll show you later. Okay. But it's on my arm here. But yeah, it's me in a bathtub full of $30 million because that is the only way I'm going to see $30 million.
And why on earth is that?
Because my ex doesn't have any money.
Have you thought, when you date terrible men, have you thought about maybe dating wealthier terrible men?
Yeah. You know, what I was actually thinking when everyone keeps asking me, oh, what are you going to do with your $30 million? I think to myself, have you ever known me to date a millionaire? No? Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get $30 million. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I should start dating millionaires. You're right.
Yeah. At least
thanks
like
for the advice.
Gainfully employed.
Oh. People with fellas. Jobs?
Yeah. Not comedians who have to do rideshare or whatever he... Do you know I slept on his floor once?
I didn't know
in
that.
In LA?
I didn't know that.
This is before everything went down.
Of course.
But this was... So this would have been like 2017 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed a place to crash. And one of the nights I crashed literally just like on the floor of a very messy home in Los Angeles.
I'm sure it was messy. Yeah.
It was rough.
You know, I never actually went to his apartment. We dated for 11 months.
Did he have an apartment?
Supposedly.
He
had an address. He did stay at my house quite a lot. Mm-hmm. But he had an address.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Those of us with embarrassing apartments do tend to sleep out as much as possible. As someone who used to have an embarrassing apartment, I would try to sleep at my lover's places who had better places.
Yeah.
I dated someone who had a worse place than me. She slept at my place. Like, this is how you do sleepovers in New York City living. Now, I have like a home I'm pretty proud of. It's a nice, big, impressive looking place, much bigger than, you know, the one you saw. And I'm very sleepover friendly now in Bushwick. So, you know, but it's a good time to say I'm here with Dr.
Thank
Spring
you.
Cooper.
Thank you.
You know, you worked hard for those letters.
I did.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, fellow, on top of a fellow sex podcaster and a sexologist academic.
Yes.
You are also the recipient of a $30 million judgment.
Yeah.
Mostly it's just the judgment.
Yes.
And the paper the judgment maybe came on.
Yes.
Because you are the first person to successfully sue someone, someone at all, it seems, over revenge porn in the state of New York.
So I was the first person in New York to press charges. I don't believe that I was the first person to finish the court case because my court case did take quite a long time. Mm-hmm. It took 6 years.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of stalling tactics that my ex's lawyers were doing to try to get me to drop the case.
Right. Studying Trump. That's
yeah. They were just like not showing up over and over and just dragging things out as long as possible. So it did take quite a long time for my court case to finish, but it was the first one that was on the books in New York. And it was the first one in New York City because New York City passed the law before New York State did. So I was actually able to press charges and adjourn New York City's law, but then it was another like 2 years, I think, before New York State actually passed the law. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you both pressed criminal charges, but then you also filed civil suit.
Yes, which is very interesting. I didn't want to press civil charges because I didn't ever think that would be helpful in any way.
See before statements about banging and dating young
people about, with jobs.
Yeah, dating broke people. Yeah.
I'm going to use this term very jokingly because I've seen it in memes recently, but I do think it's funny. Do you know the term hobosexual?
Sounds like you.
It sounds like me. Hobosexual is somebody who like sleeps around for an apartment.
Oh, I would think the hobosexual is the person who like consistently sleeps with guys. You remember pre-COVID, this must have been 8-9 years ago. Remember there was that like really suave homeless guy who was sleeping around to have places to sleep,
mm-hmm,
in like the West Village?
I don't
Which if you're
that,
gonna be good looking and homeless, do it in a good neighborhood like the West Village.
Yeah,
will sleep in nicer places.
Of course, of course. Or move to a country where they support their citizens and then maybe you don't have to do that.
Don't really understand what that means.
Sounds very foreign to me, and it's foreign means scary.
So I don't even know, like, really where to begin. You know, why don't you just tell us, like, kind of where this started at? I don't know how much you've been talking publicly about how many interviews you've been doing. But yeah, tell us what happened. Let's start from the beginning. How on earth did this man trick you into dating him? Let's start there.
We met on Bumble. He had these bright, beautiful eyes in his photos that attracted me. And we dated for 11 months. We were trying to have a child at one point. We were very happy. We also had a lot of drama in our relationship. He didn't have a lot of just trust in relationships and was always kind of trying to catch me on things, though I was never lying about anything. And so he broke my trust a lot of times, like, you know, looking through my phone, looking through my computer. I had home security tape he went through. So, like, he broke my trust over and over, but I was very forgiving and wanted to work things out with him. We broke up in November of 2017. And he wanted to get back together, and he kept messaging me and kept asking me to get back together. And I kept saying no, and he kept getting more and more harassing in his messages. And he was mostly messaging me on Snapchat originally because the messages wouldn't save and I couldn't, like, have proof of the things he was saying to me. And so I blocked him on Snapchat, and then he started getting harassing over text. And the last thing he actually texted me was, he said, "I see you blocked me on Snapchat. I've had to take action." And then I blocked him on text. And then the next day, the first revenge porn post went up.
And where did these posts go up?
The first one was on Tumblr. Most of them were on Tumblr, but the very first one was on Tumblr. And the reason I knew about the first one was from the account he posted on, he actually messaged me threatening me first, saying, "If you are not my personal web slut and if you don't send me images and videos of you whenever I request and do whatever I say sexually and tell me about every sexual encounter that you have, I'm going to post these images." And I actually didn't know that that was Ryan at first. We were able to prove that that was Ryan behind those very first messages. But I didn't know it was him at that point. And it came the day after, you know, I blocked him. But I didn't even connect it at the time because I did not think that somebody that I loved and trusted so much would be threatening me and saying they're going to post nude images of me.
Did you think it was someone you knew, or did you think it was just all bunk effort?
I thought, they don't have images of me. Who is this? Like, I don't know who this is. And I talked to a bunch of my friends, and all my friends were like, "Just block that account." Yeah. Like, they're just threatening you. Just block them.
Because it is a common scam. That is a common scam, and people should be aware that that's out there, where there are people who just, like, message you and try to threaten you, trying to get some money out of you or try to get nudes out of you to then do more. There's a lot of, like, young people, there's like high schoolers who are falling for this. And so that, like, that's out there. And so, like, reasonably you think, oh, like, why would this person who loved me do that?
Right.
Surely it's just this scam I could ignore.
Right. So I blocked that account. But because he had threatened this, my friends and I were all watching that person's blog. So the name of that original account was CaliDaddy26. As you mentioned, he did. He used to live in California. So the CaliDaddy26 blog, we were watching it the next day. And I had several friends and I, we were taking turns watching the blog. Like, we were all watching it. Like, we were watching it in, like, half hour shifts. Wow. I had a whole group of friends and we were all watching it. And then...
little hurt I was not asked to join this group.
You don't want to watch it because it's a revenge porn blog. And
I'm
so
I've always wanted to be part of a group chat.
All the posts on there are horrible posts that were non-consensually posted. So then my images went up on the blog, and one of my friend's boyfriends was the one watching at that time, and he texted me, and he screenshot it and sent it to me, and he said, "Spring, you're on the site. I'm not joking." And, like, I couldn't believe it. And I looked, and the images were ones that Ryan was the only one that had. So I knew instantly Ryan was behind it. I didn't know if he, like, gave these images to someone or if he was the one who posted it, but I knew immediately he was the one behind it. And one of the images posted on that very first post was also a screenshot of my OkCupid profile with like this 86% match rating, which just a few days before, Ryan had texted me that exact photo saying, oh, look, I saw you on OkCupid. Look how high our match percentage is. We should be dating.
Of course, a broke comedian would look at a B and go, look how good this is. It's a B. As an academic, I'm sure you did not appreciate that. You were like, yeah, oh, honey, this is above. Not a good GPA. This is
90 or above only for us. Yeah. So it was obvious to me that he was behind it quite immediately. So that day we reported that post and I went immediately that afternoon to get an order of protection.
Okay. And how did that go? We do know that notoriously police are not always very receptive.
So to get an order of protection, you have to go to family court. So I had to go downtown in person to family court offices and present my case and say why I needed an order of protection. So I had these like images that I had screenshot and I'm walking into this big scary court building and I was sitting there with many other abused women. And I was talking to these women that were sitting there with me and one of the women was telling me about how her boyfriend had pushed her down a flight of stairs and she had broken her collarbone and she was there to get an order of protection against him. And I was sitting there thinking, my story means nothing. Like, who cares if these stupid images are on the internet? This woman's collarbone is broken. And I felt stupid. I felt like my mine wasn't worth what theirs was. The woman asked why I was there and I told her. And she was horrified. I'm so grateful that I talked to her about it because like I was almost ready to leave. I had almost convinced myself that like something online isn't as important as something that happens to you physically, which I would love to talk more about in a minute. But at that time, I was able to then say, okay, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to ask for the order of protection. I went in. I was before a male judge and I was terrified to tell him what happened. I thought he was going to like make fun of me. I thought he was going to say like, why did he have these photos? You know, all this stuff. And I went in and I presented my case and I told him what happened. And immediately he didn't ask any questions. He just signed the order of protection and handed it to me. And I was so grateful. And I thought at that moment, oh, it's done. Because the order of protection says that you're not able to talk to someone, you're not able to talk about them, you're not able to post about them, you're not supposed to see them in person. But like it includes, you're not supposed to post about the person. Right. And I was like, great, I'm safe. Who would break an order of protection?
Right.
I wasn't safe.
No.
It didn't help.
What and the order of protection, is that like indefinite? Was that for a certain period of time?
Yeah, so that the first one is called a temporary order of protection, and then we both have to show up to family court after that. But the order of protection was actually never delivered for like over a month. Okay. Because as we mentioned, he did have an address where he supposedly lived. That I've never seen, but they couldn't deliver the order of protection to him. He was never there, or his roommate would tell them he wasn't there. The job of to who was supposed to be delivering this order of protection was the sheriff's office in Brooklyn. And so they were the ones that were supposed to be delivering it. And so I would call every day and ask them, did you deliver it? Because it was my job to follow up to make sure that it was delivered. So I would call them every day and say, did you have it delivered? Because I was like terrified and I wanted to make sure that this protection was in place. And they kept saying, no, we can't find him. We can't find him. We haven't delivered it. And then one day I called them and they said, oh, we got a call from the police in Connecticut, and they told us that he doesn't live in New York at all. He lives in California. And I was like, well, that's interesting because Ryan has an uncle that's a policeman in Connecticut, and he does live in Brooklyn. So try to deliver it again. So they tried to deliver it several more times. I eventually gave them an address of one of his friends that he was like doing some under the table work for, typing up recipes for.
So, I mean, before we like go continue linearly, like when you first see the revenge porn, what's the feeling that you got? Cause like it kind of touches on how you were like, oh, physical harm. It's more important than the stuff that happened on the internet. But how about, like, what were you feeling?
So the first one, I'll tell you, was not nearly as bad as every single one after that. And I'll tell you why. The first one, the images were a little tamer and they were only up for less than a few minutes. They were at, like, we reported it. It was taken down almost instantly. That is the only time that happened. Every other time a post went up when I reported it, I think he must have taken that one down. I think he must have taken it down after, like, he might, maybe he second guessed himself. Like, I'm not sure. I don't know how it got taken down so fast. All I know is that every other time I reported post, they took days to weeks to get taken down. Mm-hmm. And every time a post is up and it's not being taken down, it's getting shared more and more and more and more people are saving the photos. So in that first instance, it didn't feel quite that scary because it was up for such a short time. I was like, well, that sucked, but, like, it's over. It didn't feel like that was going to be with me forever. Mm. Every other time after that, the images were up and they were shared, they were saved, they were, you know, seen by thousands of people. And so when that happens, when you see your images on a public site, knowing that anybody can look at them, anybody can see you engaged in sexual acts without your consent. The feeling that I want to describe is like things being ripped away from me, like as if I'm like having my skin ripped off of me. Like there's like this sense of like protection that I didn't know that I had that's gone. Like it's like a sense of dignity or a sense of like just privacy that like you didn't know you had. Like you didn't know that you were enjoying this like way of living your life until it's gone. When you see the images, like it's so scary. You're trying to get them reported, you're trying to get them taken down. It takes days or weeks. You're like constantly checking, you're constantly watching the numbers of the shares go up, of how many people have reposted it go up. You're just like watching this, like helpless to like, there's nothing you can do once you've reported it. There's nothing else you can do. And unfortunately, the websites, what I believe their policy should be, if something's reported, it should be taken down immediately and then reviewed, and then they can put it back up if they decide it should be up. But that's not the case. What they do is they wait until they can review it, and then they take it down. Mm-hmm. And so that means that it could be up there for a very long time, which means it's making them money, which is why they're not taking it down, because it's getting more shares, it's getting more play on their site, but it's also illegal and it's causing more and more harm the longer it's up and the more and more people have those images and then can repost them on their own. So it feels horrible in the moment, but then it feels horrible forever after that as well, because then you have no idea who has these images, who has these things, and that feeling is the same. We have research to show that the psychological and emotional impacts of a cyber sexual assault are the same as a physical sexual assault. Those impacts are exactly the same. And also they go on for longer because the images and things are still out there. And so there's also this sense of perpetuity with some of these emotions and things that people experience because of cyber sexual assault. But the other thing that a lot of cybersexual assaults have is some sort of doxing, which is sharing someone's personal contact information as well. And so in my images and videos, he did share my Facebook information and then all of my work contact details, my physical address, my phone number, my email address. And I then had thousands of men harassing me. And the harassment was not as bad as the actual sexual assault, but the harassment was pretty horrible because it was ongoing and it was continuous. And the things that these men would say to me were horrible.
Yeah. Ryan did, he was repeating, he was making a bunch of multiple accounts, right? He was making a lot of accounts.
What I believe happened is that he was giving the images and videos to different accounts.
Okay.
So there's a lot of like revenge porn accounts on Tumblr, and I think they have like you know, they all message each other and share things. So it's clear that he was behind all of them, but I suspect that's probably what he did. But I do think some of them there were also, so like if there was a long history of revenge porn post on that account, I think he probably gave them to those accounts. Okay. But then he also did create accounts. I mean, there were all my images and videos were shared on Twitter, on YouPorn, on Pornhub, on X-Hamster, on, I mean, the through Facebook, like they were, you know, my images and videos were everywhere. Right. So it wasn't just Tumblr. So I think he also, I know he also created some accounts to stalk me on Instagram. So like he was creating a lot of accounts, but then also I think he was directly feeding things to other accounts as well.
The point being that your images were shared a lot in a lot of places, a lot of times. What kind of period of time are we talking?
The most intense was about 4 months. Yeah. And then, but I call in my head, I call 2018 the year of the revenge porn. It was like mostly through 2018, there was quite a lot of posting. And it slowed down once I pressed civil charges. It didn't slow down once I pressed criminal charges, but once I pressed the civil charges, which was very interesting because I also, I had, so one of my best friends was the reason I got the civil lawyers. I think this is an interesting part of the story. I had gone on vacation and I asked my friend to watch my Facebook for me because that's where I was learning about the new post. Every time a new post went up, I'm getting these messages from these jerks, and then I would have to try to be nice to them and try to figure out where the post was so I could get it reported and taken down. So they would harass me and then I would be like, oh, where do you see my images? And try to get them to tell me. So I had been dealing with this for months, so I left one of my best friends in charge of my Facebook so I could go off the grid and go on vacation and like try to get a break from this. Mm-hmm. And during the week I was gone, the first videos went up. It was the first time videos were posted. And Preston, he's one of my best friends, he like freaked out and he tried to get them taken down and tried to get them taken down all week and he couldn't get them taken down. And he reached out to Daniel Zakowicz, who is an amazing lawyer, and talked to him. And when I came back from vacation, he was like, Spring, you've got to talk to this lawyer. He's like, because I was pressing charges, you know, I'm making police reports, nothing was happening. We're doing all this investigation ourselves. We're trying to find like what information we can find, what we can collect, because the DA didn't know how to collect the information. They didn't know how to investigate it. The police didn't know how to investigate the crime. It was a brand new crime. Yeah. I still think they don't know how to investigate it because police aren't trained to investigate criminal crimes. They don't have a department to investigate internet crimes. Did I say criminal crimes? Internet crimes? Yeah. They don't know how to investigate internet crimes. And so there was no one to do that. So I was doing all of that. And then once we hired the civil lawyers, they had training in that and they were able to like subpoena these websites, figure out who's behind the post, actually submit lawsuits. And so
the websites ended up giving you that information?
You have to do three subpoenas. You have to do a subpoena to, like, for example, Tumblr to get the email address behind the account. And then you have to subpoena the email company, so Google, Yahoo, whoever, to get the IP address behind that. And then you have to subpoena the internet provider to get the address of the person associated with that. So it's three subpoenas to figure out who's behind an account. So quite a lot of work. So my lawyers were doing that and we were able, so then I actually started suing anybody who created a brand new post about me, not someone who just reposted one, but if they like took the images and videos and made up their own little professor slut thing about me and posted it. I started pushing these civil cases out. And as soon as like three of those had gone out, all of the post stopped going up about me, which I think proves my theory of this like ring of they all talk to each other. All the people are there posting their revenge porn. They're all sharing stuff. They're all talking to each other. They're all messaging each other. So when they find out that I'm just now going to sue anybody who's posting my images, it stopped almost immediately.
Mm-hmm. And did you end up following through with those other ones? Or you,
none of the other ones followed through because of different, like in different states, there's different things you have to prove and different, so the one with Ryan, we followed through with. The reason to really press civil charges is really to set the precedent. It's really to show like that this is a crime that is a real crime and that deserves punishment, and that hopefully other people that are thinking, oh, I would do that, won't do it when they see $30 million, you know?
The criminal statute, it was very new for both the city and the state of New York. Those have, I remember when those got passed like in the past decade, right? And, you know, all very pre-COVID. in the past decade. Like these are this is a new crime, as you said. And yeah, the precedent has been set. Like 30 million is like a base number, because you know what? It's like a new first time they do it. They don't know what the number should be. And now other juries will look and be like, well, what'd that first one get? 30? And then it's something to kind of go off of. And that's a scary number,
yeah.
You know? And when someone has that judgment, it's like, obviously he doesn't have 30 or 1 mil to hand over. But so like, what happens then? Like, if he works, do wages get, does stuff get taken out of his wages? Like,
yeah. So you have to sue. That's another like,
sue again.
Yeah. So you have to sue to have wages garnished. And so then you can sue to have wages garnished, but they can only take like a percentage above like a standard of living or something. Sure. So someone has to have a job on the books to have that taken out of.
Are you looking out for that? Are you keeping an eye on his LinkedIn?
I actually owe my lawyers quite a lot of money. So I, any wages garnished will actually be going straight to my lawyers.
Yikes. What kind of effect does that have on your dating life, your love life?
The day the very first post went up was the day I had a first date with someone I was really excited about. We had like met before a couple of times, but it was going to be our first date. I met him that night and I told him I had this crazy day. These images went up. I had to go get an order of protection, you know. So glad to like be relaxing here with you now. And he was like, I don't want to hear about that. That sounds like some crazy like ex drama. Like I don't want to hear about that. And I was like, okay. And then I went on some more dates with that person and he continued to say,
you did?
And you know, this was actually what most people kind of were saying to me during this time when I was going on dates with people. They didn't want to hear about it. You know, it was like, you know, it's kind of like someone has some trauma and you're like, I'm not ready for that. But like, it was like ongoing and it was happening. And it's like, I couldn't not talk about it. It was like taking over my life. It became, after a point, a full-time job of us searching for the, I had friends that were helping me do this, searching for the images, getting them taken down. This job is like a horrible job. It's not a job you want, because when all of the revenge porn sites, like it's so, so upsetting to look at all of these women posted without their consent. And they do things to show you that they're posted without their consent. The reason they post like the person's Facebook, usually often they post Facebook, is to show like what their job is. Like they had a screenshot of like my actual job to show like, oh, she's a professor. She doesn't want these images up. They do things to show you these are posted without their consent. And that's the really effed up thing, that like they're trying to make a case like this woman doesn't want these things posted. So when you see these posts, they're very disturbing because it's obvious that these women don't want these images posted. And so your images are like amongst all these other women who don't want their images posted. I'm saying women because they're mostly women, but there are people of other genders who have revenge porn, of course, posted of them. But the majority are women on these sites. It's really upsetting to like have to search and go through that. But like, we were doing all this investigation. We're also doing all the police reports. I'm also like following up. I'm also crying all the time. Yeah. I'm also being sexually assaulted over and over. I'm also being harassed all the time. So it was constant. It was my whole life.
And then you're trying to kind of live a life a little bit and go on the occasional date. Let me have a few hours where like I'm a little distracted from it. Or at least I like feel like I'm with a safe human, and you got people saying, I don't know, I don't want to hear about X drama.
Yeah,
like rounding it down to X drama. You know, like what would have been a more appropriate? What kind of responses were you looking for when you share that on these dates?
Yeah, I mean, I think like I hope that it would be different now, but I don't know that it would be. I know people's responses to me are different now. Oh, I saw you on the cover of the New York Post. You won $30 million.
Hey, want to go out, get married? Want to like legally combine houses?
I mean, people have also said horrible things to me like, oh, well, we know how much nudes of you cost now. And I'm like, that's not what happened here. Nobody paid me for those. I was sexually assaulted over and over. You know, but I think that there's a little more awareness I hope now of cyber sexual assault being a real sexual assault. I feel like during that time in 2018 that it was that still a lot of people didn't understand that. People were still like, oh, it's the internet. But
kind of
I don't
know. what's the big deal attitude?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I don't know why I'm making excuses for these people.
No, but- I think you're hitting on like the culturally, I think we were at a point where like we were just starting to shift. I think Me Too was like about to pop off around that time. So I think there was still a little bit of a what's the big deal attitude. Or even worse, there was the if you don't want those out there, shouldn't have taken the pictures, yeah. Shouldn't have sent them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I definitely got a lot of that. I got a lot of that from the police when I would be making a police report. They would say, like, well, why'd you give them these photos? And this is 100% beside the point. Yeah. It doesn't matter. But there are like images of me that were shared. Some of them were taken without my consent. Some were screenshot images. Some were ones that I had given. Some were ones that had been taken without me knowing. And so there were all sorts of them. And it doesn't matter what type of image they were. It doesn't matter how somebody got them. It doesn't matter why they have them. It's never okay for someone to post them in any case. And so getting asked those questions, you know, it's just like insult on top of injury and like makes you feel like, oh, no one's going to help me. No one's on my side. And when you are already a victim of sexual assault and you feel like, oh, the people that are supposed to be supporting me, the people that are supposed to be helping me don't know that it's against the law, don't know how to collect the evidence, don't know what to do about it, don't know how to follow up on the crime. It really sucks. Like you're left feeling very alone and like nothing's going to help you and nothing's going to change.
Did you have any like steady romantic partners at the time who were maybe more supportive than these first date fuckheads?
I did end up dating some people during this time. I think there was a lot of stress during that time, so it wasn't the best time for me to be dating, maybe.
Okay. No, that's fair.
There was a lot to struggle through. Yeah.
What did you do you feel like have you ever in the past, a deeper past, have you ever felt differently about what we call revenge porn? Did you ever have to have like a shift in mentality about it? I know I have.
So I would say I definitely didn't understand the impact. I had heard of revenge porn before it happened to me. I knew what it was. I didn't understand the full impact of it until it happened to me, for sure. Mm-hmm. I knew that it was a sexual assault. I knew that it was happening, but like I hadn't heard much about it. I hadn't like heard from anyone that it had happened to. And so when it started happening to me, I was like, oh wow, this is horrible. And you know, I think that the really scary thing is that it can happen to anybody now. Because of AI, because of deepfakes, like anybody can be a victim of this crime, even if you've never been naked in the room with a phone. You know what I mean?
Even if like, you're a never nude.
Exactly. These images can be created of you and they have the exact same impact. If an image was created of you and it's shared publicly, it's going to have the same impact on you, whether or not you actually took that photo. This crime is becoming more and more prolific, and we can see like the 6 years ago, it was like 1 in 25 Americans had been the victim of non-consensual image sharing, and now it's like 1 in 10. Mm-hmm. So it's very quickly doubling or more than that in how often it's happening. And I think that, you know, we really need to turn the tides and like how we're thinking about this as a crime. Like, you know, people I think all the time will like have a picture of themselves with someone else that is nude or sexy and they'll send it without asking that other person. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people still don't understand how harmful that is and that that's a crime and they should not be doing that. They should never send. I would say never send an image of someone else at all without asking. I don't care what they're doing in that image. I think people have a right to, you know, understand where images of them are and what's happening to them of any type. But that's maybe because I'm traumatized.
Sure. But you do bring up the accurate point of revenge porn applies to the group chat with the girls where we share the dick pic. It's like, did you clear? Because that's, I feel like, a thing where there's a little bit of like lady exceptionalism going on where they're like, yeah, yeah, revenge porn is terrible, but this is, we should be allowed to still do this.
Yeah. No, even if there's no faces in, no, you should never be sharing an image without someone's explicit consent.
And if you don't have that explicit, you know what you can do in the group chat? We can turn the time back and get real good at writing descriptions of that big dick that you just fucked the other night. You can just get good at describing it if you don't have permission.
Yeah, sure.
Sure. I don't know. We're just trying to, because, you know, it seems like part of girl culture to be in a group chat and everyone.
Is that what you think girl culture is?
I think that's an element. I think it's an element of hetero bi girl culture. Is how was the dick? I've heard that this is a question, and it's. I think there's a lot who will just shortcut to here's the dick.
Okay,
this is me overhearing women talk. That's all. That's all I know. I don't know much. I'm a dumb boy. Tell us about, so which came first, the criminal case or the civil case? Or terms of like actually happening?
Criminal.
And how did that go? What was your experience like with that?
The criminal case has to be processed before a civil case. Okay. So the criminal court case carries with it, in New York, carries jail time with this crime. And I don't believe that jail is reparative. So I had offered in a plea that if he pled guilty, I offered a year-long abusers program that has shown reduced reticence. It's a year-long thing that you have to attend weekly. And so I offered him that, and he accepted that plea. So that was what his criminal court case punishment was.
And he pled guilty to that, I think I saw 2021. Does that sound right?
Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah, I think it's December 2021, yeah.
Okay. And that's, some might say, wow. Does that come from a place of grace, or is that coming more from a place of principle of how what you believe criminal justice should be?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't
like
see...
Were you doing him a... Do you feel like you were doing him a favor, or do you feel like you were doing the right thing?
Oh, no. I felt like that was the only option. I mean, I don't see someone going to jail for a crime and then being like, oh, yeah, that was wrong. Like, I don't think that's what jail teaches people. I think that jail often teaches people how to do crimes better. So I was hoping that he would learn something and not want to commit this crime again. So I was hoping that that might happen through that abusers program. I did have a couple of people reach out to me and say that he had posted images of them before as well. So
once they saw
my stuff was in the media, because
it occurred before the cases, like he did it before the cases, or
I'm not sure when those things were happening, but I had people reach out to me and say that he had done that to them. So I think that, you know, it wasn't probably his first time posting images of someone. And I was hoping that there would be something that would help him.
How did it feel to be reached out to by these women?
I mean,
I assume women you don't know.
Right. Every time someone reaches out to me that I don't know now, it's scary. I don't know why they're reaching out to me. I've been harassed so much that, you know, I'm always nervous about what someone might be coming to me with. So, for example, I remember one woman who had reached out to me. She like just kept messaging me, and I was like, look, I would like to FaceTime with you. I want to like see you and talk to you. I don't feel comfortable just texting with you about this because I don't know who you are. I don't know who's behind this. You know, I was afraid that it was like him trying to get more information again. So, so she did finally agree to FaceTime with me. And, after I FaceTimed with her, and then like, and Googled her and tried to like confirm that this is like a real person, you know, then I felt comfortable like, talking to her and supporting her and helping her. She didn't live in New York, helping her try to press charges. So only one person I like talked to extensively about it. The other one I couldn't like really confirm who they were. Sure. So I gave them just some general advice. I've had a lot of people reach out to me throughout this, you know, people saying that this happened to them and they couldn't press charges for any number of reasons, or they couldn't come out about it, and thanking me for doing that, you know. So like there's that end of the spectrum that's been very supportive and does help me feel like appreciated for all this trauma and all of this like re-traumatization that I'm going through. And then I've also, you know, still get harassment and still get people emailing me, you know, saying horrible things to me. That will always happen, I think, in this world of sex negativity. I mean, we still have so much stigma around sexuality that it's so sad to experience that regularly because of the fear people have around sexuality.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, I can't, you know, there's so much I can't understand with the harassment that I've received over this. Like, it just, you know, I'll like look at a message or an email that I've received and I'm like, how does this person like, why did they want to send this to me?
What compels a human to do that? Like, who raised you?
Yeah. It's so sad. And, you know, I do think, you know, it's really interesting for me to like think about, you know, my dating life in reference to this. And you're asking those questions about it at the beginning. And like, even now, you know, like, I think it's impacted the relationship that I was just in, like going through the court case, like it impacted that relationship, you know, like it was deeply traumatizing for me. And all of this like comes back up. And every time I talk about it, it like comes back up. And it's like, so I'm dealing with it. I'm dealing with it all the time. And like, yeah, it's hard. And I definitely have trust issues now. You know what I mean? Like I don't trust anybody to not share my images. You know, I don't give people that I date any nude images of me. Maybe a couple of sexy ones if I've been dating you a really long time, but like I'm still terrified of that. I am constantly worried about what people are sharing about me with other people. It's scary.
What does healing look like for you moving forward?
Well, I'm manifesting a book deal. Okay. Anyone out there listening, if you're an agent, you want to get this memoir on the books, let me know. I want to tell my whole story. There are like so many crazy parts to this story that like we haven't even gotten to. I mean, we could literally talk on this podcast for like 5 hours and we wouldn't get through all of the craziness.
You withheld some crazy?
There's so much. I can't even get it, keep it all in my head at one time. It's like what I was going through and like the crazy stuff that was happening was just constant. And like, I want to like tell it from my side. And I also want to like, I want to help people understand what it's really like to experience this. And there are no memoirs of cyber sexual assault published yet. There are many of physical sexual mm-hmm. assaults, but not of cyber. And so that's like, that feels really important to me to publish that and to have that out there and to like help also destigmatize other survivors of this and all the survivors that have reached out to me. So grateful for their support. And I'm also very supportive of those people. If you're one of those people who like has a question and you want to ask me something, you can definitely reach out to me. I have been offering those support and directing people toward, you know, resources, and I'm happy to do that. And that feels like that feels healing to me. You know, advocacy feels healing to me. Mm-hmm. I conducted a research study. I am a professor of sexuality. I conducted a research study a few years ago with one of my master's students, Rachel Adler. Rachel and I conducted a study where we wanted to look at what does people who have gotten over cyber sexual assault, how did they get over it? So we recruited people specifically that said they had gotten over their cyber sexual assault. And then we asked them, like, what helped you move through it? All of the people in our study, all of them identified some sort of advocacy that they had been doing. And we didn't even ask about that. That was something that just organically came up in the interviews. Some people had started like huge movements. Some people were just doing advocacy in their everyday lives. But every person who said they had gotten over their cyber sexual assault in some way had been doing some advocacy. And so that seemed like really important as something that was like common among all our interviews to recommend to people to try to take your agency back in some way, to be able to say like, okay, you know, let me actually go out into the world and try to make a difference on this topic. And so that is something that I've been doing a lot of. And I mean, through the court case, but then also I'm part of the New York City Cyber Sexual Abuse Task Force and a larger international coalition called Reclaim. And being part of those groups has been very healing. And sometimes I also have to step away from it. Sometimes it's too re-traumatizing and I need a break and I need to say like, okay, I need to like go back into my shell a little bit. And then when I'm feeling okay, I go back into that work. And it's that process of like, it's almost like, you know, you get a little better. It's not linear. You got to take a step back and you can go back into it. But yeah, I hope to continue that advocacy in many ways.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the task force is like doing, what y'all do with that?
Yeah, they're constantly like trying to improve the laws around cyber sexual assault. So that means like making the punishments more scary for people. It also means like, so sometimes a law, and the laws are different in every state. Right. So like, for example, some laws will say you have to show that the person was trying to ruin your life. You have to show this like meanness.
We had Caitlin Bowden on like back in 2020 and she was talking about that, and that how that was such a complicated factor in so many laws was the, yeah, but the, it's the intent was the thing that like will fuck things up.
Right. And that's hard to show in some cases.
Is it that case in New York as well or no?
I'm not sure what the status of the law is at this moment. Sure. I would have to check. But we've been doing a lot of advocacy. And there's also always like improvements to that to be happening. And then all of the like new technology as it comes out needs to like be updated into the laws as well. So like things about deepfakes, AI, like all of that needs to like be updated. So there's constantly things that need to be updated in the laws and policies. Another thing the task force does is like they do trainings and they make educational materials for police, for schools, for different groups to like teach about the effects of it, what protections you can do. And then also they've done trainings for judges, for lawyers, for police, and like all of the related issues so that they can better understand and better work with survivors.
What other types of people are on this task force?
It's a lot of lawyers. There's some academics, some survivors, but it's mostly a group of lawyers. But
And Carrie's one of them, right?
One of the leaders of that.
She's one of the big names in revenge porn.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Carrie
Goldberg.
Goldberg, yeah. Right. Okay. I mean, yeah, it was wild to see the very first report of this with you, like all those years ago. I remember seeing that. And I'm not going to lie, there's like 10% that was like, yo, that's my friend. Friends in the paper. You know, like I am my father's son, where like it doesn't matter what it is, like kids in the paper. Doesn't matter what it was. Yes, you know. But I was like, look, my fucking friend, the Trailblazer. First one pressing charges on this thing. You know, and because like I also knew Ryan and I was like, oh, you know, like, I knew what kind of bum he is. It was wild. I also remember the in between because I feel like there was stuff, there's a time in between the breakup and when the stuff like really started going down. And I felt like I was almost like on the phone with both y'all individually until eventually the pendulum swung.
Yeah, I remember saying very clearly, I think you were the only mutual friend Ryan and I had. Ryan,
friend being loose. I knew the man through comedy.
Yeah.
And I knew he had like this babe girlfriend that I was like, I feel like she and I should know each other.
Well, yes. Okay. So you were our only mutual friend is what I said. And because he had just moved to New York and so he knew all my friends, but he or I didn't meet any friends that he had. So I'm not, I don't know, but you were our only mutual friend. And so when this all started happening, I remember very clearly saying to you, like, you can be my friend or you can be his friend, but this is one of those things that, like, this is really serious. This is really bad. I was like, you're going to have to choose. Like, you can't stay friends with both of us because I can't be in contact with you if you're in contact with him. And you chose right. I'm
glad I did.
No, you can have one of the millions. Here you go.
I won the millions. Oh, I got one of the fake millions, everybody. Still need to join the Patreon though. You still, this is a theoretical million should it ever appear. It's really just $1 million pledged. That's what a judgment, that's what a civil judgment is. It's pledged money that you may never see. If you ever got the 30 mil, which I, let's just pretend you got 20 of it. I don't know how lawyers work, but like if you ended up with this, what, how would you, cause if he, maybe he hits the lottery, you know, and then maybe you're like, well, that money's secure. What would you do with it? Surely you came up with a list in your head.
I would give a lot to my friends and family. And I would also definitely.
I'm a friend.
Yeah.
I think I'm covered with friends and family.
I would definitely.
For at least $2 a month on Patreon, I'm covered.
Yeah. I think I already give you $2 a month.
That's what I was referencing.
I'm a big supporter. $2. I tried to make it go up once and I couldn't figure out how to log back in. So sorry about that. You got to make that process easier. You know, I think that I would like to conduct some more research. I would put some more money toward research in the topic and also toward some of the nonprofits that are doing this work and support those because we need a lot more support in this area. And I think, unfortunately, the crime's going to keep getting bigger. And I think we need a lot more efforts. And we also need a lot more efforts in, you know, comprehensive sexuality education at young ages where we're teaching consent, we're teaching privacy, we're teaching boundaries. Like this is where the efforts need to be. And so that's the type of thing I would love to put money toward.
Yeah. Yeah. Two other questions just about this specifically. And then I promise I'm done with the topic. But one is, I guess the guilty verdict, the pleading guilty maybe doesn't invoke as much of an emotional response, maybe just because it's like this negotiated, whatever. But when the civil judgment comes in, which is determined, right, and correct me if I say something wrong, because remember, I'm dumb. Civil judgment comes in, that's determined by the jury, right? Not just like the whether or not, the liability, whether or not, but just like how much. Even though you know, like, this broke dude doesn't have $30. What did you feel when you heard that?
Oh. I mean, let me tell you that I kind of lost my faith in the world throughout this process. Like the, you know, how long it's taken, like the, all of the harassment I received, like, you know, like not trusting people. Like it's been a rocky road, you know? And when the jury went out to deliberate, they were out for over an hour and like he had already been, it was already found that he was guilty. This was this jury was only there to decide the amount. And they could give me $1. They could give me, there's no max. They could give me any number they want. Mm. And they were deliberating for over an hour. And I thought to myself, like, this is really bad. Like, why are they deliberating so long? Like, you know, they already know he's guilty. We've presented.
Is an hour considered long?
Well, it seemed like a really long time.
I feel like it takes like
20,
30 minutes to fill out the paperwork.
It seemed like so long to me. Sure. And court closes at 4:30. Like at 4:30, court's done. Everyone has to go home. You know, that's it. So it was 4:30 and they were still deliberating. And so the bailiff went down and they were like, it was a holiday weekend. They're like, you're either going to have to come back on Tuesday to finish deliberating or you're going to have to like wind this up. And they're like, we'll do it. And the like stenographer in the courtroom is like, I got to go. I got a train to catch. Like, what are we doing here? And everybody's like waiting to leave. And finally the jury comes back in. It's like 4:37. And they sit down and they go through the different types of awards. So there's like I don't remember all the correct phrasing for these, but it's like basically like, you know, for the emotional compensation, for like
reputational,
for, right, whatever, and then like for the future, like because she's gonna have to live with this forever. And so they went through and they said 5 million, 5 million, 5 million, 15 million was like what they went for the four different categories, and it added up to 30. And like my lawyer's jaws dropped, my jaw dropped, like I couldn't believe it. And like I heard this 30 million and I was just like, is the world an okay place? Like it started to like restore my faith in humanity. Like that moment, like I was like, wow, these people on this jury could see like how much this impacted me. I had two of my friends come on the stand that day and like talk about like how bad it was to like do all the searching, getting the images down, all the things they were supporting me with, how I was like spending the night at my friend Sarah's house all the time because I was like too afraid to like be in my home alone because I was like just so traumatized, you know. And they both cried when they took the stand and they were talking about this. When I saw them crying 6 years after all this was happening, I was like, wow, this just didn't impact me. You know, like this was very traumatic for all of the people in my life. You know, this was really big. And for the jury to like really see that and acknowledge that, yeah, it felt like, okay, maybe I can trust the universe again. Maybe.
That's good. It's a very hopeful ending to that. An ending to something that will never like truly end with you, but it sounds like here's a dozen or so people who just like saw me, validated, you know, what I've been feeling, and that I'm glad that could begin like a restoration of faith.
Thank you. And my lawyers did run into a couple of them outside the courthouse afterward, and they said the reason that they deliberated so long was a lot of the people on the jury wanted to pay me more. And that felt also really good to hear. Like I was like, wow, okay. Like I was thinking, you know, they're like, oh, what are we supposed to, why do we want to pay? You know, like I was of course thinking like the worst, but like to hear that, like they were struggling to like find the number because people wanted, like really felt strongly about this. Like that felt really, really good.
I'm glad to hear. You know, in my Ask the Guest channel, in the champagne room, it was asked by someone who's also been the victim of this before. What is your advice for someone of like what to do, maybe the beginning steps of what do they need to do if they believe they've been a victim of revenge porn?
The very first thing I want to tell you to do is screenshot, 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 document everything, because that is the most important. You have to have the evidence, and you are the person that's in charge of the evidence. No one else, unfortunately, is in charge of that. So document everything as quickly as you can.
I think they found Ryan.
You hear the sirens? document everything. And then I think it's very important to go to the police. I think, you know, even if you decide you don't want to follow through, I would recommend getting a police report done. And one thing that a lot of people don't know is you don't have to go to the police station to make a police report. You can call them and have them come to your house. That's what I would recommend. I would recommend having a friend over when you do that so that you feel safe and supported.
These are things you would have wished you had, had done?
Which I did. I mean, I made numerous police reports. So later on, I realized I could do this. But the first several
going
ones I was going, was not.
Yeah.
And you're waiting around for hours. It's not fun. And then the other thing is also, you know, you want to report and have the stuff taken down immediately as well. I can share the link with you. I have a link. We've created like documents about like the way to get stuff down off of all of the most commonly posted on websites, because every website has different ways that you have to go about getting your stuff taken down. And when you're stressed, it's very difficult to figure it out. Some of them make it very, very challenging. Yeah. And so So it's always possible to like Google, like, how do I get something taken down off this website? But I'll also share that link because we have it all compiled. The Cyber Sexual Abuse Task Force compiled this all together, and we have this great resource. So get it taken down. Screenshot everything before you get it taken down. Go make a police report and then reach out to trusted friends and family and talk about it. Like, definitely recruit people to be your supporters, to like just emotionally support you, to have people that you can talk to about it, because and if you are able to go to therapy as well, definitely go to therapy, because it really has a big impact on people, and you need all the support that you can find.
Yeah. Well, Spring, thank you for coming on and sharing your story. And congratulations on the judgment and on knowing he's not going to fuck with you anymore.
Let's hope.
Did you get any update about the program that he's been in, or?
I assume that he's completed it, but I have no information about him.
All out of mind.
Yeah.
He knows not to fuck with you and you don't give a fuck. Great. Fantastic. Well, Spring, thanks again for coming on. And well, people should know you also have a sex podcast.
I do.
You do. What is it called? Where can they find it?
It's called The Sex Wrap, WRAP. It's on every podcasting platform. It's on every social media at The Sex Wrap. And we answer questions about sexuality and relationships. And the co-host is my friend Andrew Porter. He's also a professor of sexuality at the University of Miami. And we just answer questions. Each episode goes in depth on a question, and we start like very elementary and then go more in depth. So we don't assume prior knowledge on any topic, but we do go pretty in depth on each topic. Any questions people have, come check us out. It's easy to like also find the answers you want, because each episode is titled by a question. So you can see, what is my question? Mm-hmm. And then just go listen to that episode.
Fantastic. So if they want to find you in a way that you feel comfortable with them finding you.
At the sex wrap.
Please do not try to find and reach out through other means, it sounds like, unless you need some support.
Yeah. It's easy to find me on the internet. So if you want to find me, you can find me.
Spring, thank you so much again. And why don't you go ahead and say goodbye to everybody?
Goodbye.
The best place to discuss this week's show is in the episode discussion channel in the Champagne Room, our super free Discord server. You can share sex toy recommendations, submit a very vulnerable anonymous confession, or show off your arts and crafts. Join the conversations today at manwhorepod.com/discord or click the link in the schnotes. Everything you could need is in the schnotes, or at manwhorepod.com. You can email me your comments, your questions, your criticisms, your stories, possibly, of non-consensual intimate media at manwhorepod@gmail.com. 2 weeks left till the 10-year podiversary. Whatever will I do with myself? 10 years every Wednesday. Never missed a Wednesday. I even gave you like 12 or 13 episodes on Saturdays in addition. What? Your engagement, your feedback, your generosity is part of what keeps this show going, what keeps me getting on this microphone week in and week out. And I love and appreciate you all for it. Show me some love. Show me some appreciation. Share the show on Maine. Be so brave. Be so bold. Treat it like it's Sex in the City. You know this isn't the show that they think it is when they hear the name of it. Come on now, share the show on Maine. Rate and review on Apple and Spotify. Get your books at my bookshop.org link in the schnotes. But the best way to support the Man Whore Podcast is joining my Patreon. You can get bonus episodes, access to exclusive fan whore communities, and behind-the-scenes content. Join today at patreon.com/manwhorepodcast. I've got a bonus episode coming out tomorrow. I'm going to play a little teaser here. It's a solo bonus show. Me kind of recapping what went down this weekend and what it meant to me. Enjoy the tease. Give me your money and stay slutty. And when I hear that, I just hear, oh, it's time to show them that there's another way. Let's get on our knees, Priscita. And when I hear that, I start to think of myself as like hosting a TV show called Clit Rescue, where we dive into a barren vulva area that's been long abandoned by others and only explored occasionally by the property owner. We do a little bit of a soft launch of the new restaurant and allow me to have a dish.